Okay, let's just go ahead and unpack this today. It is February 2026, and we are we are months away from the World Cup kicking off.
We are. It is right around the corner.
And looking just a little further down the road, the 2028 Olympics are just barreling towards Los Angeles.
Yeah, the eyes of the entire world are basically turning to the West Coast right now.
Exactly. And it's supposed to be this huge moment of glamour, right? The global spotlight and the red carpet and the gold medals.
That is certainly the glossy brochure version of it. But if you peel back that layer, if you look at the actual city itself,
It's a reality on the ground.
right, the sidewalks and the bus stops and especially the municipal budget, the picture is it's a lot grittier.
Gritty is definitely one word for it, because I was looking at the numbers from the stack you shared, and frankly, they are terrifying.
They really are.
We're talking about a city facing a $1 billion budget deficit right now, a billion with a B.
Yeah, it's massive.
How does a city with that much wealth, that much property value, end up $1 billion in the hole while the potholes are literally still eating cars for breakfast?
Well, that is the question of the decade right there.
Yeah.
You've got this crumbling infrastructure and a housing crisis that just refuses to abate.
Yeah.
And there's this pervasive feeling among residents that the actual machinery of the city is just, it's seized up.
He's totally stuffed.
Exactly. And that brings us to the central tension of today's deep dive. We aren't really sitting here asking why the politicians are bad.
No, that's too easy.
Right? It's too easy. What we are asking is, how do you fix a 21st century megacity that is essentially trying to run on a 20th century organizational chart?
So you're saying it's not really a personnel problem at its core, it's a design problem.
Precisely. It is a structural design problem. And to get to the bottom of this, we've got a really interesting stack of sources today.
We do.
We have technical government data from the MRSE.
That's the Municipal Research and Services Center for anyone listening.
Yes. And that source basically explains the dry legal mechanics of how cities are built. But then on the other side, we have this series of incredibly fiery advocacy letters and reports from the AIA LA.
Which is the American Institute of Architects Los Angeles chapter.
Correct. And I have to be clear, we aren't taking sides here or endorsing their platform, but we are looking at their arguments. And these aren't your typical polite, please consider this, letters.
No, they're definitely not holding back.
They are sounding the alarm. The architects are basically screaming that the city needs a total top-to-bottom overhaul.
So for you listening, what is our mission today? Are we just going to sit here complaining about LA traffic, or is there an actual solution we're digging into?
The mission today is to understand charter reform.
Okay. And you just lost me.
I know, I know.
Charter reform sounds like the title of a textbook that I would immediately use as a doorstop. Why should I, or anyone listening, actually care about a city charter?
I completely get that reaction,
Yeah.
but you have to care because the charter is the operating system of the city. If your phone's operating system is from 2005, doesn't matter how many cool new apps you download, the phone is going to crash.
Right, the hardware just can't keep up.
Exactly. And the argument from the Architects Advocacy Platform is that Los Angeles is trying to run modern software, solving homelessness and climate change and hosting the Olympics on a computer that was built in the 1920s.
And so it's crashing.
It is crashing constantly. The goal of these reforms they're proposing is to transition the city from a culture of gatekeeping, where the default answer is always no, to what they call a city of yes.
I really like the sound of that. A city of yes.
Yeah.
So let's get under the hood here. You call the charter an operating system, but what is it strictly legally speaking? Is it just a giant rule book?
Think of it as the city's constitution. It determines the distribution of authority. The MRSE source breaks this down really well.
Right.
Across the U.S., you generally have two main flavors of city government. Flavor one is a council manager system. This is how most medium-sized cities work. It's set up kind of like a business. The city council acts as the board of directors, and they hire a professional city manager who acts like a CEO to run the day-to-day operations.
So the elected politicians set the grand vision, but a hired professional actually handles the execution.
Right, and it's usually pretty efficient. But Los Angeles, like New York or Chicago, uses the mayor council system.
Okay, how is that different?
Well, you have an elected mayor who acts as the executive and a council that acts as the legislature. It's modeled directly on the federal government.
Yeah.
Separation of powers, checks and balances.
Which sounds good on paper, right? That is democracy. We want checks and balances.
In theory, yes, we absolutely do. But the AIA sources argue that in practice, specifically in the way LA has grown over the decades, This system has mutated.
Mutated how?
Well, they argue it hasn't actually created checks and balances. What it's created are silos.
Silos, meaning everyone is just kind of operating in their own little isolated tower.
Exactly. The city is highly fragmented. The architects describe the experience of trying to get literally anything built as maddening. It's like a maze where the walls keep shifting on you.
Give me a concrete example of that, because if I am just a regular person listening and I want to fix up my neighborhood, what does this fragmentation actually look like on the street level?
Okay, let's do a thought experiment. Say you want to improve a single city block. You want to repave the street because it's full of cracks. That request goes to the Bureau of Street Services.
Simple enough.
But you also want to add a bike lane for safety.
Makes sense. Do I just talk to the same guy at Street Services?
Absolutely not. That is LADOT, the Department of Transportation. Totally different bot, totally different budget.
Oh boy.
Okay, now you want to plant a tree to give the cyclists some shade. That is the Urban Forestry Division.
Of course it is.
And, you want to fix the curb so a wheelchair can actually get through. That might be engineering.
So I have to go to four different offices and get four different approvals just to fix one single street.
Yes. And here's the real kicker. None of them were strictly required to talk to each other.
You are joking.
I wish I was. So you might get the permit to pave the street, but the bike lane gets rejected. Or the tree gets planted, but then the utility company comes in a week later and cuts it down to access a wire because they had no idea the tree was going to be there.
That sounds insanely wasteful. Just a massive waste of taxpayer money.
It is. It's the classic left hand not knowing what the right hand is doing, but multiplied by 40 different municipal departments.
So what is the fix then? If the operating system is this fragmented, do we just fire everyone and start from scratch?
The proposal from the AIA is consolidation. They are calling for the dissolution of the Board of Public Works.
Wait, dissolve it completely?
Yes. And this is a body that has existed for a century. They want to replace it with a centralized professional director of public works and merge all these disparate departments into a unified Department of the Public Realm.
Department of the Public Realm, that sounds a lot more holistic.
It completely changes the philosophy. Instead of one guy saying, I own the asphalt, and another guy saying, I own the tree, it becomes, we own the street.
You treat the public space as a single unified product.
Exactly.
Okay, that makes total sense for the organization side. But even if you have the best team in the world and they are all finally sitting in the same room, they still need to know what they are supposed to build, right?
Right. And that leads us to the single most shocking fact in this entire stack of research. We're calling this section the missing blueprint.
I have to admit, when I saw this in the prep notes, I thought it was a typo.
It's definitely not a typo.
So according to these reports, Los Angeles, which is the second largest city in the United States, is the only major U.S. city without a multi-year capital infrastructure program, a CIP.
It is baffling, honestly. A CIP is standard operating procedure for almost every functional city in the developed world.
So for the listeners out there who aren't urban planners, what exactly is a CIP? Is it just a big municipal wish list?
It's way more than a wish list. It is a blueprint. It's a literal legally binding schedule. It says in 2026, we are fixing these 10 bridges. In 2027, we are upgrading the sewer lines in this specific district.
Got it.
It maps out capital investments over 5 years so you can actually budget for them and coordinate the work.
And LA just doesn't have one. So how do they decide what to fix when something breaks?
They do it year to year. It is almost entirely reactive. They basically wait for a pipe to burst or a road to collapse or a major lawsuit to be filed, and then they scramble to find the money to patch it up.
That is like trying to build a skyscraper without a set of plans, just showing up in the morning and deciding what to do with the bricks today.
It is exactly like that. But it's actually worse than just being bad at planning. The AIA platform points out that this is a massive legal and financial liability for the city.
How so?
This gets into some recent court rulings, specifically the post-Sheets court rulings that are really shaking up local governments everywhere right now.
Okay, walk us through this. Why does the court system care if LA has a 5-year plan for its roads?
It all comes down to impact fees. Let's say a developer wants to build a huge new apartment complex. The city says, great, but your new residents are going to put a massive strain on our local roads and our parks.
Naturally.
So we are going to charge you a $50,000 impact fee to help pay for new infrastructure.
That seems fair enough. You break it, you buy it, you add the density, you pay for the upgrades?
In principle, yes. But the courts have ruled recently that there must be a nexus.
A nexus?
A strict legal connection. The city has to prove in court that the $50,000 is going to pay for a specific road expansion that is strictly necessary because of that specific new building.
Ah, I see. So they can't just throw the developer's money into a giant general slush fund and use it whenever.
Exactly. They need to essentially show the receipt in advance. They have to say, we are taking your money to build Project X on this specific date.
And I think I see exactly where this is going. If you don't have a five-year CIP plan,
you don't have a Project X.
Great.
You have no list. You have no blueprint. So legally speaking, you cannot prove the nexus.
Which means the developers can just sue the city?
They can sue and they will win. They could walk into court and say, you have no plan, so you cannot legally charge us these impact fees.
Wow.
So by not having a CIP, the city is literally walking away from millions, maybe even billions of dollars in revenue that should be pumping for our parks and our roads.
That is just wild. It's a completely self-inflicted wound.
It really is. It's the city refusing to act like a business, and the courts are finally saying, if you want to tax developers like a business, you have to plan like one.
Okay, so we desperately need a plan. But plans need a visionary, right? Someone to actually draw them up. And this brings up another major role the architects are fighting for in this charter reform. The chief design officer.
The CDO, yes.
Now, I will be honest with you. When I hear the title chief design officer, I immediately think of a guy in a black turtleneck at a Silicon Valley tech company talking about the rounded corners on a new smartphone.
Right, it sounds very corporate.
Why does a city government need a CDO?
It's a totally fair question. But the sources are very clear on this. They aren't asking for a graphic designer to come in and make the city's website look prettier. They are calling for a licensed architect to have genuine executive authority.
An architect sitting right in the mayor's office.
Yes. And the reason comes down to a concept called design thinking.
Which can be a bit of a buzzword. What does design thinking actually mean in the context of running a government?
It's the exact opposite of the silo problem we talked about earlier. Design thinking is fundamentally about synthesis. It is about solving three or four problems with one single move.
Give me the City of Yes version of that. What does a CDO see on the street that a regular department bureaucrat just completely misses?
Let's go back to that street repaving project. A standard bureaucrat looks at the street and they see a pothole. Their job description says fill the hole. So they fill it and they are done.
Job accomplished.
Right. But a design thinker or a CDO looks at that exact same hole and connects the dots to all the other departments. They might say, wait a minute, we are digging up this street anyway. Los Angeles has a massive water shortage issue.
Right, the watershed problem.
Exactly. So can we design this new pavement to be permeable so it actually captures the stormwater and filters it down to refill our natural aquifers?
Oh, wow. So the street itself becomes a water gathering tool.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they don't stop there. They say while the street is open, can we widen the sidewalk slightly to create a zone for outdoor dining to help the local small businesses?
Nice.
Can we plant specific canopy trees to lower the ambient temperature of the neighborhood and fight climate change?
So suddenly, just filling a standard pothole becomes a water infrastructure project, an economic development project, and a climate resilience project.
Exactly. And often for roughly the same cost as just digging the hole in the first place. That is synthesis.
That's brilliant.
But without a CDO, without a conductor standing at the top, telling the water department and the street department and the forestry department to work together, those opportunities are missed every single time.
It seems so incredibly obvious when you lay it out like that. It's really just working smarter.
Right.
But speaking of things that seem completely stuck in the past, let's talk about the money again. Because if the lack of a blueprint was shocking, the math behind our parks department is just, it's honestly sad.
Yes, this is the 1937 frozen formula.
We have a stat here from the sources. Los Angeles has dropped to 90th in the National Park Score rankings. 90th.
It's a tough number to hear.
We have some of the absolute best weather on the planet. How on earth are our parks ranked lower than cities that are buried in snow for half the year?
Well, it is not the weather. It is the charter. The Department of Recreation and Parks, or RAP, is funded by a strict formula that was written into the city charter back in 1937.
1937. I mean, my grandmother wasn't even born in 1937. FDR was the president. LA was mostly orange groves back then, right?
It was a completely different world, a totally different city. And that ancient formula allocates exactly 0.033% of assessed property value to the parks.
And that tiny number hasn't changed since the Great Depression.
Not in nearly 90 years. But obviously, the city has grown massively. The complexity and cost of running a modern park system has grown. And here is the real tragedy of it. Because the funding pot is so artificially small, the department essentially has to cannibalize itself just to survive.
What do you mean by cannibalize itself?
The source material notes that nearly 40% of the entire park's budget is now diverted just to cover indirect costs.
Like what?
Things like paying the municipal water bill, paying staff pensions, paying for the electricity to keep the lights on.
Oh, man.
That is money that should be going to fixing broken swing sets or mowing the grass or running after-school programs.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just being eaten up by basic administrative overhead.
So the grass dies, the bathrooms stay locked, and we fall down to 90th place in the country.
Yep. Exactly. The proposal from the architects to fix this is simple on paper, but politically it's quite difficult. They want to amend the charter to double that allocation. Move it from 0.033% to 0.065%.
This seems like such an incredibly tiny shift, literally just a fraction of a percent.
It sounds small, but in a city with Los Angeles's massive property values, that tiny fraction represents a huge amount of money. It restores decades of deferred maintenance and cuts.
Right.
It's essentially the city finally admitting, hey, maybe a budget formula from 1937 isn't the best way to run a modern metropolis.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. So we've got the operating system update. We've got the blueprint. We've got the designer and the parks funding.
Right.
But I want to pivot and talk about the actual people trying to build things in this city. The entrepreneurs, the small business owners, the homeowners. The AIA report uses this phrase, city of yes, a lot. What does that actually feel like for a resident?
It represents a massive shift in user experience. Right now, if you walk into a city office to get a building permit, the cultural default of that office is no.
Right, it's the department of no.
The staff there are trained to act as regulatory gatekeepers. Their primary job is to find the mistake in your paperwork.
Yeah.
They look at it and say, you checked the wrong box, come back in 2 weeks.
It feels incredibly adversarial. Like, you are guilty until proven innocent just for wanting to open a business.
The city of Yes proposes what they call a concierge model. Completely flips the script. The staff shouldn't be gatekeepers. They should be active solution providers.
So if I want to open a coffee shop or say I want to build a little granny flat in my backyard instead of handing me a rejection slip and sending me away, what do they do?
They sit down with you and say, okay, we see what you want to do. Here is the path to get this done legally and safely.
Here is how we get you to yes.
Exactly. And this is so critical for the housing crisis. We talk all the time about missing middle housing, you know, duplexes and fourplexes and ADUs. We desperately need a permitting system that makes approving these small-scale projects easy and fast instead of a multi-year nightmare.
We actually have a really cool glimmer of hope here in the sources regarding this. The Mass Timber Accelerator Program in Santa Monica. This sounded fascinating.
This is a perfect real-world example of the concierge model. Santa Monica wanted to encourage mass timber construction.
And that's using prefabricated wood panels instead of traditional steel and concrete, right?
Right. It's much lower carbon. Yep. It is way faster to build. And architecturally, it looks beautiful.
But usually if you bring a brand new building technology to a standard city inspector, they just completely freak out.
Oh, usually, yes. They say, I've never seen this material before, request rejected. But Santa Monica took a different approach. They partnered actively with the architects.
How so?
They offered technical assistance. They bumped those projects to the front of the line to prioritize the permits. They essentially de-risked the entire innovation process.
They became partners.
Right. They said, we want this sustainable building type in our city, so we will help you figure out how to do it.
That is the concierge model in action.
It is. But with city government, there is one massive financial hurdle in LA that drives architects and small businesses absolutely crazy. They call it the tax trap.
Ah, yes. The gross receipts business tax. Now look, tax policy can get really boring really fast. So explain this to me like I'm 5 years old. Why is this specific tax so unfair to design businesses?
Okay, let's use an analogy. Imagine you organize a big group dinner at a restaurant for 10 of your friends. The final bill comes and it's $1,000. You collect the cash from everyone at the table to pay the bill.
Okay, so I am physically holding $1,000 in cash.
You are holding the cash for maybe 5 minutes before you hand it to the waiter. Now imagine the city comes in and taxes you personally on that $1,000 as if it were your own income.
But it's not my income. I'm just passing it through to the restaurant. I didn't make $1,000.
Exactly. And that is exactly how the gross receipts tax works for these firms. An architect might win a master contract for a project for $1 million.
Right.
But they don't keep that money. They have to hire structural engineers and mechanical engineers and landscape architects. They pass a huge chunk of that money, say $400,000, directly through to those external consultants.
But LA taxes the architect on the full $1 million anyway.
Yes. They tax the gross receipt. And then when the structural engineer receives their $400,000, the city taxes the engineer on that same money again.
That is literally double taxation.
It heavily penalizes collaboration. And the sources argue very strongly that this policy drives creative businesses completely out of Los Angeles.
Well, yeah, why wouldn't it?
Right. Why stay and pay tax on money you never even kept when you can just move your office across the border to Burbank or Culver City and pay a normal fair tax rate? A true city of yes cannot have a tax code that actively punishes you for working together.
That is maddening. It really feels like the financial system is designed to push the innovators away.
And that leads perfectly to the final big idea here.
Yeah.
The expert source calls it design thinking as a philosophy. It's about zooming way out. It's realizing that city government shouldn't just be about enforcing rules and collecting penalties. It should be about actively managing assets.
Asset management. That sounds a bit like Wall Street finance talk.
It does, but apply it to the municipal level. Los Angeles, as a corporate entity, is a massive landowner.
Oh, sure.
The city owns huge parking garages. They own empty retail spaces down at the Civic Center. They own thousands of vacant lots. And currently, these properties are often just sitting there doing absolutely nothing. The architects call it government-induced blight.
Just gathering dust and attracting graffiti.
Right. A department of real estate that was actually managed with design thinking would look at those neglected parcels and say, how do we make these productive?
Put them to work.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Maybe that empty retail space becomes a revenue generator for the city. Maybe that underutilized parking garage gets converted into mixed-use affordable housing.
So instead of just raising taxes on the residents again and again, you actually make the city's own stuff work for the city.
Exactly. It is moving from being a passive landlord who says, I'll fix the roof when it eventually leaks,
sure,
to being an active manager asking, how do we add value to this public property?
Right.
And that philosophy applies to the streets, too. We touched on this earlier, but the complete streets concept is really vital here. A street isn't just a concrete chute for moving cars as fast as possible.
Right. It's where we live our lives.
It is the city's living room. It's a complex utility network. It's a watershed management system. It's a vital social space. If you start viewing the street as a holistic design project, rather than just a slab of asphalt, you unlock all this hidden value for the residents.
So let's try to pull all these threads together for you listening. We started this deep dive talking about the World Cup and the Olympics. We started with the global glitz. But the reality we've uncovered is that to actually support that glitz without collapsing, we need a highly functional engine room.
That is exactly it.
We need an operating system update, which is charter reform, to break down those municipal silos. We need a blueprint, that 5-year CIP, so we actually know what we're building and can legally justify paying for it.
We need a conductor, like the chief design officer, to make sure the street and the water and the trees are all playing the same tune.
And we desperately need to stop starring our parks with a budget formula written in 1937.
And ultimately, we just need to transition to that city of yes model, where the government finally treats its citizens like customers to be actively helped and not just nuisances to be regulated.
It sounds incredibly ambitious. I mean, maybe even a little utopian, given how entrenched things are.
I would argue it's not utopian, it's existential. If you want a functional megacity in the 21st century one that can actually handle climate change and population growth and, yes, the upcoming Olympics, you simply cannot run it on a 1920s organizational chart. It will not work.
So before we completely wrap up here, what does this actually mean for the listener? Maybe they aren't an architect. Maybe they don't even live in LA.
Here's the thought I want to leave you with today. We have talked a lot about a frozen funding formula from 1937. We've talked about frozen departments that refuse to talk to each other.
Right, the whole frozen system.
I want you to look around your own city, wherever you live. If you stop viewing your local city government as just this chaotic obstacle course, you know, something you just have to survive to get a permit, and started viewing it as a design project that can be optimized, what do you actually see?
That is a really powerful shift in perspective.
What other hidden frozen problems in your hometown could we solve almost overnight if we just updated the operating system? Is your city truly designed for the future, or is it basically running on Windows 95?
I think a lot of us might be pretty afraid of the answer to that question when we really look, but it is definitely a question we need to ask.
Well, hey, thanks for unpacking all this technical stuff with me today. It has been a real eye-opener.
Always a pleasure.
And thank you for listening to this deep dive. We'll see you next time.